welcome. You are listening to the CHI Podcast, the place dedicated to educating and supporting parents and professionals, hosted by Dr. Sandy Munoz, CEO of the Children's Healing Institute.
Their laughter will make your heart melt. Their strength will make a grown person cry. If you ever see a child fight cancer, it will change your life forever. Cure Bears. Hi, my friends, and welcome back to another episode of the CHI Podcast. Today, we are talking about pediatric cancer. Over 15,000 children per year are diagnosed with pediatric cancer. The diagnosis of cancer in a child can be a devastating blow to parents and family members. It can create an instant crisis in the family, especially when they are facing the unknown. Today, we are speaking with Michelle O'Boyle from the Kids Cancer Foundation, which provides hope and support to young patients dealing with cancer and their families.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for joining us on our podcast today. Can you please tell us a little bit about yourself and about the Kids Cancer Foundation?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm Michelle O'Boyle. I'm a pediatric oncology nurse, and I've been one for over 35 years now. And I'm the founder of the Kids Cancer Foundation, which is a nonprofit charity that provides support to local children and families battling childhood cancer. Everything related to, you know, from the time they're diagnosed to the time they finish treatment and even after treatment for late effects. So we kind of carry the whole spectrum. We kind of walk the journey with the families as they're going through treatment and even after the fact.
That is just amazing and such an amazing cause. What causes childhood cancer?
The thing with childhood cancer, which is a difficult thing when you even first talk to families, is there really very few cancers can you say something's caused it. We don't know really what causes any of it. We know how to treat it, but we just don't know what causes it.
And is there a type of childhood cancer that's more common than others? What do you guys usually see?
The most common type of cancer in children is leukemia, which is a blood cancer. So that's the most common. The second most common solid tumor would be brain tumors that we see. But we're fortunate in childhood cancer for the majority of all types. You know, there's multiple different types and subtypes of cancer. But for all types of cancer, we have about an 80% survival rate. And for some of our leukemias, that rate goes up over 95%. So, you know, we've come a long way.
Wow. I can't imagine as a kid, you know, you're hearing that kind of diagnosis and you can be pretty scared and confused. So how do you actually talk to a child about their diagnosis?
We deal with children from like babies to, you know, 20 something year olds. So we kind of gear how we talk with them based on their age and their developmental stage that they're in. And kind of very upfront from the very start, we don't not use the word cancer. We use it to, you know, and explain what it is. And we're very, you know, depending on the age of the child, how much we get into detail with them about it. The younger ones that are younger children, you know, don't really have as many, you know, preconceived notions about what cancer is. It's the older children that have a lot more questions. And, of course, nowadays with the Internet and Google and they can look things up, you have to be really careful that they're always coming back to us. If they're looking anything up, that they're getting, even with the parents, you got to get reliable sources and make sure you're checking because there's a lot of information out there and it can be frightening.
Yeah, I can imagine even, you know, I can imagine the kids having questions, but my gosh, I can imagine, you know, as a parent who already has some preconceived notions on what cancer is or what it can mean because maybe a grandparent had it or a mother had it, you know, they must really bombard you with just a lot of questions and fears, I would think, too. My goodness.
A lot of the fears with children, well, of course, most of that, you know, even pretty young ones, they're obviously the first question they're always going to ask is if they're going to die from their cancer, which is such a difficult question. And, you know, luckily for us in pediatrics, you know, we're always working, you know, towards, you know, for the majority of them, it's a cure. We're looking for cure so that we're not, you know, we're expecting to work together and get them well. And the other thing they worry is about losing their hair, which we do have a variety of different options with either wigs. A lot of our kids here, especially in South Florida, they don't really like wigs, get hot and all. So we have different varieties of headwear that they can get that, you know, they can wear while they're, you know, while their hair is, they lose it. We always tell them, of course, it's coming back, just gone for a period of time. And the other worry they always have is school, because especially if they're school age, they're worried if they're not going to be able to stay up in school with their peers. And, you know, it's hard enough already being sick and missing, but they get concerned about school, which is why we have an educational advocacy program that works with the families and the children with school, setting up hospital homebound, doing tutoring as they need it, and trying to so that they don't lose those steps, you know, and they can, when they do finally return back to school, they can be with their friends again and all of that. So that's our goal.
Yeah, so that, you know, one of the questions I had is, you know, what happens with school? So the kids, obviously, when they're going through treatment, they can't be in school. So it's almost kind of like when we went through with COVID and everybody was doing things online, that's what they kind of go into. Are they still part of their class, or are they like in a different type of environment?
Yeah, for most of our children, at least, we always tell them at least the first 6 months of treatment, they're probably not going to be able to attend school because of their treatment regimen and their just the exhaustion and how fatigued they'll get, as well as just their immune system being so, you know, we wipe out their immune system while we're treating them. So just the risk of infection. So a lot of, most of them go on to hospital homebound for that period of time. And we have options. So one thing that is nice now, we do have our educational advocacy program and we have a tutoring program. And so we have a retired school teacher that works with us that does the advocacy program, who can do their hospital homebound school with them. So some of these kids are actually now coming into the center and doing school here, just one-on-one with our teacher or tutors. And then once they can go back, then they'll advocate to make sure they have all the accommodations and things in place for them to return to school, because that's a whole nother, you know, system for parents even to try to navigate that once they are ready to go back into school. There's a couple things that, you know, they're going to need some special accommodations, at least in the beginning, and even moving forward, they could have some learning issues that they didn't have prior to being diagnosed just based on their treatment, or that some of them they may improve, but some may last a longer period of time. So we want to make sure that they don't get discouraged.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, too. So when they do go back to school, you kind of see them, there's some kids that have to play catch up. Is that a result of the treatment that they have, or is that just because they miss so much school, or is it
kind of
a combination?
It's kind of a combination of both. And a lot of these kids have some, you know, they have issues with their memories, at least in the beginning. It takes, you know, like people talk, adults a lot of talk about chemo brain or like a fog. Kids sometimes express that as much. The older ones can, but the younger ones don't really realize it. But it's like things that they did really quickly, it may not take them longer for their processing and things like that because of the chemotherapy they've received. So it may take a little bit more for them to grasp onto things that they more easily understood quickly. So that can be very frustrating when they're not used to that. So we kind of guide them through that, you know, and kind of have different accommodations in place to help them so that is not, you know, they don't get as frustrated and they understand that some of this will go away and it will get better. But, you know, we're going to have to figure out how best you learn and how, you know, we can catch you up. So, and like I said, we do have tutoring and available here. And now since COVID, we've gotten very creative with that because we cover a large, geographic area. So coming to the center always be an option for tutoring. But now with, doing like Zoom and different online platforms, we can do some tutoring that way if we need to for some kids that we normally couldn't get to service because it was just too far for families to travel. Now we
definitely
can do- Nice. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Other than losing their hair, what kind of other physical changes can kids face when they're going through chemo and different regimens?
Yeah, it depends. They can have a lot of body image changes, whether they have weight loss, weight gain, some acne that can come from some of the treatments and things like that. And, you know, that's very difficult. And also that they just, their stamina compared to, like, they just aren't used to, they, like, tire more easily. They don't realize it sometimes even until they actually try to get back into the swing of going to school and stuff. That it's, you know, they're not used to that kind of a schedule and that intensity. So that can be very, you know, frustrating because they normally, oh, I didn't have any problem. But now it's like just a chore to walk from classroom to classroom if there's a distance or things like that that'll just exhaust them where they didn't before. So it's kind of, we try to anticipate things and prepare them as much as we can before, you know, so they don't get scared. But, you know, some of that stuff is hard.
Yeah, they kind of have to face it as they're going through it. And thankfully, you guys are there to support them, you know, during that process.
Right. And we have we do have counselors here that work with them. And we really just expanded that program where we have a regular counselor that meets with our children now and the families, and she can do child, adolescent, and family therapy. So she has been, we've been doing a lot of intervening early, anticipating some kids that may have already been, you know, especially if they're already kind of shy, quiet kids, mm-hmm. preparing them to get back into school and things like that so that, you know, because it's difficult, you know, we have, it, you know, there's tough times in school for kids that don't have cancer with bullying and things like that. So we want to give them tools so they're equipped to handle going back into a regular school and try to eliminate some of that as much as we can.
What about the parents? So we talked a little bit about, you know, the kids, but I can imagine as a parent, you're kind of feeling like you got hit by a Mack truck when you're in the doctor's office and they kind of come in and tell you that your child has cancer. How do you guys support the parents emotionally? What are they going through? What are you seeing as far as the parents?
Literally for a family, I think getting this diagnosis, I would say it's like a deer in the headlights. They like get, you know, they generally are a healthy child. They've never had to navigate the healthcare system, these families, a lot of them. They've had healthy children. Suddenly they're hit with this diagnosis and it turns everybody's world upside down, the entire family. And generally one parent has to be the caregiver and it means taking time out of work, taking care of this child, and it can be all consuming. What we try to do is encourage them to utilize a lot of our programs and services that are there to be kind of a respite for them because we do have this center that's open Monday through Friday. So we try to let them utilize that to take breaks so they can actually do something for themselves, to like leave the child with us for a little while, go take a break. Even if you just want to go read a book for a while or go someplace or shop even, just in general, go grocery shopping by yourself. You don't have to worry. Take your time. We have the child here. We're entertaining them and doing activities with them, and they can get a break. We also try to encourage them to, you know, utilize other people in the family or other friends that might want to help them because it just is overwhelming and that they can't do it all. And the most important thing is they don't get sick because they're, you know, the child needs them. So we really need them to, you know, stay healthy, eat healthy, get enough rest. It's not easy. And, you know, sometimes it's not easy at all, especially if they end up in a hospital and, you know, the child's sick in the hospital and they're not really sleeping for days on end while their child is, you know, in the hospital because it's just not conducive to sleep even. We try to make it that, but it's not. And that kind of stuff. So we, and like I said, we have a counseling program too to work with them, and we're trying to encourage parents to utilize those services early to kind of help, because a lot of times what we do see is a lot of times parents are in survival mode, and it's not until they actually finish the treatment that we see some post-traumatic stress and things like that in families. And it can be years after treatment and something just triggers them and suddenly they're processing everything they've gone through. And, you know, we're here, you know, they need, we always let them know, you know, we're here no matter what. So even if it's after and it's a period of time, you think you need help, we're here to help you with that, because that's, you know, they go into survival mode and they don't really process everything until later on.
Definitely. And I can imagine, like, how do they handle themselves financially if a parent has to stop working? Are there resources available to families when you know, they don't have the same income?
Yeah, we do have resources. I do like the patient care navigation. So literally my goal is like to walk them through from the day they're diagnosed. I meet with the family, with the doctor, and sit with them to hear their treatment plan. And then I walk them through step by step as they go through treatment. And what I do is I have a resource in whether it's local, state, or national resources to assist the family. And then what I'll do is I'll get all the information I need to apply to those different organizations or, applications for all the different agencies. And I will fill out the paperwork for them, talk to them about what their needs are and kind of fill in the gaps. And then where there is a gap or where they don't maybe need assistance, where they may not qualify or they need a bill paid or something, the Kids Cancer Foundation has financial assistance program as well that we can fill in for them, because it's usually about 6 months that they really are going to not have to take time off of work. You know, somebody is. Mm-hmm. And so there is going to be that gap of where they don't have the income coming in. And we try to sit with them. And we also have a financial team we work with that also does some debt management, which will, if they're already having financial issues, we can get them early on hooked up with them so that they don't get further behind, and that can help them look at their budgets and things like that, what we can eliminate, what they really need, and just get them through the period that they need to, you know, maybe take time out of work and things like that.
That's amazing. The Kids Cancer Foundation does so much to help families navigate their journey. Is there anything that you guys do that we haven't had the pleasure of hearing about yet?
No, we have, like I said, we have the patient care navigation program. We have a child enrichment program, which does a lot of activities and services in the center for the children. And like in the summertime, we do a summer camp that we run Monday through Friday for families to utilize, which all that stuff is nice, especially for children with cancer, because the problem parents have is obviously these kids are, you know, their immune system, like we've all kind of faced with COVID, kind of understanding infection and being careful about who you're coming in contact with. When they know that there's an organization and a group and an area where they're safe and they can bring their kids and they can still be around other kids and they feel like it's safe and they're not at risk of being sick, that really helps. And it even helps for the children to be around other children, whether it's siblings and or patients. And we try to do the program. What we do at the Kids Cancer Foundation is we provide services for the entire family. So it's not just the child with cancer. It can be siblings as well. And we treat them very holistically. So all of our programs and services are free for all of our patients and their families. And their so we really try to look at it a holistic picture and help everybody for all the different resources. So that's really,
and I think that's so important to point out, because that's one thing we didn't talk about is, you know, the siblings, what happens to them, you know, when a brother or sister is diagnosed with cancer and also mom and dad are, you know, focused completely on the patient. So, you know, thank goodness that you guys are there to help out with the sibling and provide them support as well.
So important. One of the big things that we noticed in the beginning when we first opened the center and we started doing more programming where the siblings were actually involved in the center a great deal, and sometimes the siblings even in the very beginning are even more involved now that we have the center, because the kids might be going over for treatment, and a lot of our patients get outpatient care nowadays. It's kind of switched from years ago. It was more inpatient. Now it's definitely more outpatient, which is good because they don't get sick as much, because being in a hospital with a bunch of sick people, they're at risk of getting sick. But the thing is, they're going back and forth for treatment so much, but the siblings, you know, the parents may need a place for the siblings to be so they're not sitting in a hospital. And, of course, with COVID, we couldn't even do that before. So they would bring them to the center. So they got a lot of one-on-one attention at the center and support. And what we did find is that they seemed to be more adjusted than prior to that. We had a lot of siblings with a lot of issues with, you know, abandonment and things like that, where the parents were so busy with the other child that they felt just left out, or they were very worried about their sibling and really didn't have anybody to talk to about it. And now that they can, you know, come in here and they kind of feel connected, they kind of feel more included in everything. So it's been a big help.
That's amazing, Michelle. I'm so happy we were able to learn about the Kids Cancer Foundation and all the wonderful work that you guys are doing. I'm so happy that you were able to join us today. If someone wants to learn more about your organization, how do they find you?
The best thing would be to log on to our website, which is Kids Cancer, S as in South, S as in Florida.org, and that'll connect you to different programs and services, and it also gives you, you know, contact if you are interested in volunteering, because we can't do anything. We have a very small staff. 90% of every dollar donated goes directly back to the children and families. So we have very little overhead, but we have a lot of volunteers, and we couldn't do half of the programs that we do without the support of volunteers. So we have a volunteer coordinator that they can contact if they're interested in volunteering. If they're interested in donating, there's different areas that they can give and different ways that they can give if they're interested in that. Or if they just want any more information, or if they have or know of a child that they think they would like to refer to us, they can also reach out and they can contact me, which my contact information is all on there as well.
Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate your time today. It was wonderful getting to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
That's all for now, my friends. Thank you to Michelle O'Boyle from the Kids Cancer Foundation for joining us today. Wishing all of you health and happiness and a prosperous 2023. Until next time.
Thank you so much for listening to our message today. If you're interested in our organization, please visit our website at www.childrenshealinginstitute.org. And don't forget to follow us on our other platforms by searching the Children's Healing Institute in the search bar. See you next week.